Woo Hype, not your ordinary wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey sort of podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Who Hype and Who Hype Live. I am Laura, one of your hosts for today, and this time out, we're joined by people you haven't seen in a really long time. It's Natalie and Harry. I'm so excited. We have Oz in the UK with us. So
hello.
Hey.
Hi.
So Natalie's up at midday, and Harry's up at 3 o'clock in the morning. God bless you for being up this late to discuss Doctor Who. And he's hiding out in the conservatory where his brother lives because he'll wake the kids up otherwise, I guess. I'm waiting for Mr. like Colonel Mustard to do you in the conservatory with the axe. You know,
Ten minutes in and I'll just disappear.
Yeah, just disappear. It's Colonel Mustard. So if he just falls out the screen, we know what's going on here tonight. So anyway, welcome everybody. If you'd like to participate live with us, you can. On Twitter is really the best way, on the Who Hype hashtag. There is a Google Q&A, but sometimes it doesn't really deliver in real time. So really your best way to interact with us on the show is over on Twitter. Just send us a tweet at Who Hype and we'll be happy to make it part of the show. I thought we could do our traditional thumbs down, thumbs up, thumbs sideways, what we felt about the episode, and then also just to sort of make it fun, because this is our second week with the new Doctor, if you could describe the new Doctor in one word, what would your one word be? So, Harry, why don't I kick it off with you? Are you a thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways, and what would be your one word to describe the Doctor?
For this episode, I'd have to go with sideways. A sideways thumb, plenty of positives in there, but there are some negatives, though it's a good sign, because I think the negatives I've got with it are only there because there's so many positives that I'm being nitpicky. So it's a sideways, but I suppose a sideways that's sort of northwest at the moment. My word for the Doctor at the moment is transitioning, because I think we're seeing him still transitioning from Matt Smith into what he's going to be, so I'm not quite sure where we are with him yet.
Good enough. I think that's fair enough. Natalie, how about you? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways, and what is your one word to describe the Doctor?
I mean, I was going to say nearly the same as Harry in terms of, like, it's like a thumb. It's like, if this is an up, it's like here. Like, it's like not here, but it's like here, if you
we
know what I mean.
We have a 45-degree angle thumb. I think that's
it's,
what
it's
we're trying
even
to say.
More than 45 degrees. I liked it. But there were some elements that I'm not sure about at the moment, like some stuff with the characterizations mainly that I wasn't quite sure about. And I mean, the plot was a new take on the Daleks, but I'm also a bit like, how many new takes on the Daleks can there be, if you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, it's fine, my word for the Doctor at the moment, and I really struggled with this, and the best thing I could come up with was Sherlockian, which worries me slightly because I really like him, and the other word, the next one that came closest was theatrical, but it wasn't quite what I wanted. I Sherlockian because I'm slightly worried that his whole... that Moffat has just decided that there's this one thing that works, if you know what I mean, with, for example, like a character being, like, totally harsh and saying unthinkable, like, unemotional things, and he's just decided to translate that to all of his characters or something, because that's... I really liked how the Doctor acted in this, but knowing, like, how Moffat writes Sherlock as well, I'm kind of like, I see maybe too many similarities there in terms of... just his, like, for example, that line, the line that you ended up picking as your quote, you could imagine Sherlock saying that about John, if you know what I mean. Like, I found that there were a lot of lines like that that were things that were that very classic Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock, I don't care about people, I'm just going to say something outrageous that I don't even realize is outrageous that I... You know, and him giving the guy that pill, like him giving the guy that tracker when he was going to die, it's a really good characterization for the Doctor. But knowing about Moffat's Sherlock as well, it makes me wonder what he's doing having those characters being so similar.
Yeah, no, I didn't really think about it that way, but I think that's a really good point on how it can be a little similar to Sherlock and some of that. For me, I think I'm also kind of with you guys on that sort of waffling thumb. It's more an up than it is a sideways, but couple things I would have liked some more answers than questions, but I think we've all learned that Moffat is the I'm going to drive you crazy with questions during the series guy. The other thing I think too, for me, my one word to describe the doctor is I felt pragmatic is what my one word for him is. He does very much, he does what is expedient in the moment. Like, he doesn't have the niceties, he doesn't have the PC sort of way of phrasing things. He don't have that Matt Smith and David Tennant. I mean, warm and cuddly isn't anywhere to be found. I
He's
mean,
not really charming.
there's no charm, there's no cuddly, but he's very pragmatic. He's just like, okay, well, he was going to be. It's not like I guess where it was really the easiest for me to come to that was the scene where all the antibodies came out, which looked like borrowed toclofane, by the way. And all the antibodies came out, and you know, he chucked something at the one guy, and he said, "Well, they were dead anyway." I mean, I didn't feel like it was that he sacrificed him, but he realized this guy wasn't getting out of it, and he was like, "Well, no point in saying any charming words. You're dead anyway." And then he's like, "He was dead anyway, saving the rest of our lives, moving on." You know, so I just feel like he's very pragmatic and in the moment, and it remains to be seen if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It certainly does weigh on people's patience after a while, and I'm sure we'll get to that and what that cost him, you know, quite physically in a minute. So, why don't we go on ahead to talking about some of the quotes? Because there were some fun quotes this time out. Natalie, since you referenced it, I think I'll kick it off with what my favorite quote was this time. And it was the doctor as he's walking through this new age ship, wherever it is. I'm assuming it's the future, but perhaps it was not. And he's walking through the ship, and he introduces Clara, who he popped back to get somehow. And he goes, "She's my carer. She cares, so I don't have to." And I'm like, I just felt like it's almost like he's asking her to be his moral compass, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know. I mean, I think he does know right from wrong. I feel like I think he's more good than bad because a bad man wouldn't give a crap. You know, if you were truly bad, you wouldn't care. You know, if you were truly amoral, I don't think you'd care. I think there is good in him, and that's why he keeps asking because it bothers him that he's having trouble finding it more consistently. So I don't know. My psychology two cents on that matter. So, Natalie, how about you? What was your favorite quote this time out?
Well, Harry actually stole mine, which was fine. Which we'll get to. So I have a couple. I just had a couple that were like, I actually thought that the episode had a lot of like zingers. Like, it had a lot of really, it was quite fast paced with dialogue, and there was actually Peter Capaldi's dialogue is, there's a lot, like it's line after line of fairly distinguishable great lines. Like, sometimes his enunciation because of his accent is actually like quite muffled, but he has a lot. But I actually just had sort of three rotating ones that were not the one that Harry stole from me. I really loved the Journey, like Journey character. She was really cool, and I liked a lot of her lines. I liked basically when she was like, when her and Clara are, you know, trying to figure out what's happening in the brain, and you know, whether it's just that the light bulbs are out, and Clara goes inside and she's like, "If there's a pack of spare bulbs, break it to me gently." I just really, that sort of really tickled me. But in terms of Clara and the doctor, I really like Clara saying, see, objectively, I really like Clara saying, "You're not my boss, you're one of my hobbies." But as we'll go on to talk about, I'm a bit confused about what they're doing with Clara's characterization at the moment. And from the doctor himself, besides from the one Harry got, one of my favorite was just as kind of a social commentary, and his opinion on soldiers when he says, "Oh, it's okay, you don't need to be liked, you've got all the guns," which I sort of felt pretty strongly about.
Great. All right, Harry, how about moving on to you? What is your favorite quote of the episode?
Okay, so my favorite and Natalie's favorite was
Yeah.
when they're just after the Ross has been destroyed by the antibodies, and they go down that chute into all of the goo. And the doctor's talking about him, and he says, oh, he's the top player if you want to say a few words. And I like that quote just because, first of all, his delivery, he really sort of underplayed it and kept it subtle, which I really liked. But also, I think it speaks so much of the darkness we're getting from this character as opposed to Matt Smith, who, you know, had all his constant spiel about 900 years of time and space, and I've never met anybody who wasn't important before. And in this episode, we see the Doctor be so uncaring, almost, about a lot of the deaths coming on. So it just shows, you know, where the character's going and that transition we're getting there.
Even throwing back... Oh, sorry, Laura. I was just going to say, even if you compare this Doctor, not even to Matt Smith, but, like, thinking back to, like, Nine, who cried over every single person that he ever saw die and stuff like that. If we were going to describe the Doctor, like, you know, if I had more than one word, I just kind of, like... He's, like, just done with people's shit, kind of. Like, he's this Doctor, he's really just, like... He's like, scraped off all of the layers of, like, not humanity, but, like, he's just really... He's really done with anything except, like, the practicalities. And it just seems like, I've done all that. I don't have time for that anymore, kind of thing. And
He's Mr., like, cut to the chase. He's, like, been there, done that, have the T-shirt. I mean, I agree with you, Harry, completely. There's just no trace of, like, even David Tennant going, I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. Like, there's none of that going on. It's like, you're dead. We'll see you in the afterlife. Moving on.
You know, when he saved Journey at the beginning and she was like, my brother just died. And he's like, well, his sister lived. Be happy about it kind of thing. It's just really, like, he's not a bad person exactly, doesn't cry over spilt milk or spilt humans, I guess.
When he went down that whole riff that he did there too, the thing that like came into my mind like right away was the movie A League of Their Own. Like, there's no crying in baseball, and for me it was like, there's no crying in intergalactic space wars. Like, that's literally what just came to my mind. And I'm like, oh my God. But it was. He is just so cut to the chase, get over it. And even when it was coming down to her being, you know, I demand you take me, and he's going, no. And then it's, well, you need to take no. And then she's like, would you please take me to my spaceship? And he's like, oh, yes. You know, it's just... Yeah, he just wants to get it done on his terms. Like, he just does. I think he's done with negotiating. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, he's not negotiating. It's just like, this is the way it's going to be. You're going to do it my way. And not negotiating.
That opening scene, I was trying to think of a word that describes that, and like as my single word, and I couldn't do it. But that opening scene of him just being like, cutting her down, like, no. Yeah, if there's a single word for like, someone like that, someone who's kind of got a bit of, you know, superiority and is really, kind of impatient, I guess. And I don't know, I couldn't think of a word to pin it down, but that scene was really quite indicative of, I think, how he is.
Yeah. So why don't we move on, speaking of scenes, why don't we move on to some of our favorite scenes this time out? I mean, obviously they were a very long time inside of the Dalek, which was an interesting concept, which we'll get to eventually. Harry, what was your favorite scene in this show?
I like staying away from being inside the Dalek a lot. I really liked the awkward flirting between Danny and Clara. The sort of, you know, he's billed as this lady killer, but he's just so hapless when it comes to talking to Clara. And it was almost like, I say it's my favorite scene and I really liked it, but at the same time I found some of it so hard to watch because it was just so painful.
So awful.
Yeah,
but I loved it because I think he's a nice change for a new character. He's a bit more subtle and a bit more human as opposed to some of the over-the-top caricatures we've had recently.
Yeah, he's not so bumbling. Like, Rory at first was, like, very bumbling and very awkward, and he's clearly not, like, Mr. Suave or anything, but he's not totally bumbling everywhere. No, I really did like the literal head desk that he was doing in the office. That was fun.
With Rory and with Mickey, they were both viewed, you know, either through the eyes of the companion or through the eyes of the doctor, as kind of bumbling and idiotic to the world in general, and they had to prove themselves. Whereas Danny is, you know, he's a, you know, very competent human being. He just happens to be bad at talking to this one girl, if you know what I mean. He's not, you know, he's not necessarily going to be bumbling, though if he does meet the Doctor and the Doctor is not too keen on soldiers, they kind of hammered that home pretty hard this week, so we'll have to see how that goes. But that scene of him kind of having the, you know, him being in the office and then having the flashback to talking to her and what he should have said, even that sort of storytelling technique is a bit unusual for Doctor Who. That's more of a standard, like, you know...
Yeah, we don't usually get that internal monologue.
Or like, or that kind of... that's kind of either a, you know, a comedy, a straight-up comedy, like a sitcom kind of thing, or a drama show. That sort of storytelling technique isn't used too much in Doctor Who, so it just felt different, the tone, actually, of his scenes as well. So that was interesting.
All right, so, Natalie, how about you? What was your favorite scene?
Weirdly, it was the death of Gretchen, the girl who kind of sacrificed herself to get the others up into the ceiling. And that, I mean, it's one moment where the Doctor did have, I guess, compassion about someone's death or sacrifice. But I wasn't expecting it, but when she kind of said to him, like Gretchen Allison Carlyle, that's my name, like, do something good and name it after me, I, like, unprompted of anything, burst into tears. I wasn't expecting it at all, and I just did. So I thought I'd better put it as my favourite. Obviously, then, you know, we had the Doctor there, you know, show a bit of, he's like, I'll do something amazing. Like, he had a bit of, like, oh, this sucks, as opposed to, you know, yeah, that's logical, cool, whatever.
Now, here's the thing, though. Did we know what... We didn't catch what he... So whatever he named whatever after, we didn't catch what it is yet, right? Or did I just miss it?
No,
I don't think it's happened yet.
Okay.
That's just something either he will or we'll imagine that he did or something like that. Like, yeah, it's... yeah, but we also have her wake up in the magical Missy garden that's meant to be heaven, which I think is probably something a bit more sinister than that, possibly, that we'll get into.
Yeah, eventually presided, the area presided over Mary Poppins on crack. So, for me, my favorite scene was Clara slugging him. I really loved it. I mean, and I'm not like Miss Pro-Violence either, but because I was good with the pragmatic. I could go with it, but it was starting to go between pragmatic to just really rude and unfeeling. Mm-hmm. I think, Harry, you talked about how he's down there in the sludge and he's like going, oh, he's on the top layer if you want to say a kind word. And it's like, that's a little harsh.
Yeah, that's harsh. Yeah.
And then there was the crack about her brother, too, and, you know, she kind of, Journey Blue, like, kind of pushed him up against a wall. And then I forget what it was that sort of instantaneously, like, precipitated Clara hauling off and slugging him. But it had definitely been building, and it was just, like, enough. And it was, I felt like he really did need a physical shake-up. I mean, I don't know that I would have personally punched him. I might have done a bit of, like, a shake, but I feel like that was something, like, a lot of us, I think, at that point wanted to do. We wanted to shake him, we wanted to slap him, we wanted to go, it was almost like very Moonstruck, going, snap out of it! You know, and I think it was good that Clara gave him that actual physical jolt that he didn't see coming. And I think that's one of the biggest things with the Doctor, is when you take him by surprise, it makes him stop and reevaluate everything he's doing, because he's so rarely taken by surprise. So I think it was a good thing that Clara hauled off and slugged him, even though, like, I'm not advocating violence, kids. Don't go and do this at home. So that's how I felt about it.
That was the bit where she said to him, we're going to die in here and you're a little bit pleased, if you know what I mean, because it's proven that you're right, if you know what I mean. Which is interesting because she still sees that in him, because at the moment I don't really know what he's doing with himself, if you know what I mean. But, like, I haven't necessarily felt the, or at least the arrogance has come across very differently with him than it has with the younger guys, if you know what I mean. Like, the younger guys were cocky. He's not cocky. He's just, like, assuming, kind of. He just assumes that, you know, and it was interesting because I did think, like, once he was inside the door, I'm like, does he actually want it? This? He's not helping this Dalek out of compassion. He's helping it out of, like, curiosity, if you know what I mean. And that's kind of different.
Well, here's the thing, because I think that's the point we wanted to get into next, is this doctor going down a path that he is possibly too dark, and will he turn viewers off? I mean, you guys have also both watched Classic Who, and we have certainly had doctors who were not all fun and games, you know, especially the first two in particular were not like, you know, doing cartwheels down through the TARDIS by any means. You know, and they were fine, and I didn't dislike those two doctors, and Lord knows the Pertwee and Patrick Troughton and William Hartnell, you know, certainly launched the series to what it is today. But then you turn around and you get somebody like Colin Baker, and I know, like, I mean, I've probably said it a couple of times already, turned me off completely in back in the day. So I don't feel like Capaldi is turning me off, but I don't know. What do you guys think? Do we want them to continue to go down this path for a while? Do we want to temper it? I don't know. Harry, what do you think?
I think it's interesting because if you look at a lot of the gallows humor we got in this episode, as we've been talking about all his quips about sisters and layers of goo and stuff, I think that's very similar to the sort of jokes that you'd get from Colin Baker when he first started. And it's interesting because you have Colin Baker got such a negative reaction to his darkness, whereas so far, critically at least, Peter Capaldi seems to be being praised for the same thing. I think the difference there is in approach and intent. Like, we see that the Doctor still has a heart, that we care. When you were talking before about Clara slapping him, based on his behaviour, I almost expected him to, you know, give her a telling off and be like, don't you dare ever do that to me again. But the fact that he didn't, and the fact that we see, as Clara says at the end, you know, I don't know if you're a good man, but you try, and I think that's what counts. I think that's what's sort of showing us that there's a lot of darkness there and a lot of anger there at the moment, but I think he'll settle down a bit. I think he'll do a William Hartnell, and he starts off quite gruff at the moment, but we'll see a softer side before long.
I think that, like, I think that there is room for the Doctor to be quite a scary and threatening figure in moments, but I think it comes across less scary and threatening, you know, no matter how angry and harsh they're being, from someone like, obviously, Matt Smith, because he's adorable. So it's just like, it doesn't necessarily have the same emotional effect or the same amount of threat to the viewer when it's someone like that doing it, whereas someone who's like an older, stern man, it could come across really, really harsh. And I think the key to sort of not necessarily having that happen is, you know, you don't want to have an old man yelling at a young girl and the young girl being like, oh, no, you know, and Clara's not like that. I actually think that it's in the same way Matt Smith was quite ageless, even though he was young, I actually feel like Capaldi is pretty ageless, even though he's older. Like, I feel like his personality in that is, like, even when he sits down with Clara and he's like, be a pal and tell me, like, He's not running around in trainers, but he's not acting with the same, you know, gravitas of a, you know, 50 to 60 year old human man.
Yeah.
But even though he's 2,000 years old, he still has the same kind of spirit. It's just maybe not as playful in this body, if you know what I mean. It is still kind of ageless, so I'm hoping it won't turn into gruff old man territory.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, I was going to say charm, but I don't think it's charm. I think it's more charisma. That Capaldi has a certain charisma about him, even when he is being gruff, and I think that's almost what makes him sarcastically likable, if that makes any kind of sense. Whereas I think... and I think, Harry, you're quite right. Colin Baker was doing the same stuff, but it wasn't coming across the same way. I think it was delivery that Baker, for good or bad, didn't have that same kind of charisma as Capaldi did, but in fairness to Colin Baker, he had the world's worst blonde-teased afro and a clown suit that he was wearing. I mean, it was hard to... I mean, poor man. I mean, it was, you know, really, it was stacked against him, and his companion was Perry, who was gorgeous. I mean, it was just... Really, he had everything stacked against him at the time. So yeah, no, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this continues to play out and how it'll go down. So let's talk a little bit more about this episode, because I think it was really sort of interesting going inside the Dalek, into the Dalek. That was, you know, it was almost like there's an old like B movie too that's like Journey to the Center of the. It's not the center of the universe. It's something like that, but it's very like shrink you, like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or whatever, shrink you down, insert you in the body kind of thing. I forget the name of it,
but it definitely had that
feel. Yeah, I mean, somebody else on Twitter, Joseph Zalmundo on Twitter actually said, he goes, it reminds me of like Jimmy Neutron, and I thought, yeah, it's got a bit of that whole vibe to it. So. They shrink down and they enter the Dalek, which, a new spin. I certainly never thought about waddling through the innards of the Dalek before. But it does raise a bunch of questions, I think. I mean, for starters, there's radiation. Like, is that going to come back and haunt them? I mean, the Geiger counter was going crazy, yet they all seem completely fine. I'm wondering if that's coming back in some way. The Doctor's, like, mind meld with the Dalek, so how's that working out? You know, I think the implications of that are going to be interesting. And then also the fact that Clara was, like, flopping around in the memory core and, you know, turning on the lights and she's having contact. Like, I just kept going back to Rose Tyler reactivating the Dalek by touching it that time, remember, like, way back? So... I don't know. So, I don't know. Harry, what do you think? What do you think are these implications of going inside the Dalek? What do you think about it or anything I may have missed there?
Well, I would have liked to have seen a bit more of the things you were talking about in the episode. I think, I'm sure we'll get on to talk about Danny and I'll probably elaborate on that a bit more. But I think this episode... For an episode called Into the Dalek, one of the things we didn't really get to explore much is what it's like inside the Dalek and the implications of that, as you were talking about. Radiation, I'm not so sure. I think that Clara touching the memory core was actually almost... I'm not sure anything will come of it now, but I like the sort of parallel between Asylum of the Daleks, where she literally goes into the path web of the Daleks and changes their memories of the Doctor. So I found that, you know, to be quite a nice parallel in two separate incarnations. She is changing the memory of a Dalek. The Doctor's mind meld with the Dalek again. It's interesting. I'm not sure what we'll get from it beyond the "you are a good Dalek" line that we get at the end of the episode. But it's certainly interesting. I'd like to see them do more with it. Maybe that's another new, unique approach we'll get in another sure to be Dalek episode before long.
Well, you know what I thought was kind of interesting on that whole mind meld thing? The point where we saw the Doctor act, I felt, the most emotional was in his interaction with the Dalek. I mean, if that's not ironic, I don't know what is, that he is so upset about the fact that the Dalek saw all this hatred in him and it was evoking this incredibly visceral human emotion. I was like, man, that's irony right there, that it took his interaction with a Dalek to get that to happen. That I thought was unusual. Natalie, how about you? What did you think about the, you know, everything that went down inside the Dalek?
I mean, number one, nice corridors. We haven't seen those before.
hey, they didn't rework the same garden set again. You know, that garden is getting a workout.
but I don't know. I was just a bit... Yeah, I mean, I didn't really understand how much of it was meant to be organic and how much was meant to be mechanical, if you know what I mean, like in terms of even the antibodies and all of that kind of thing. But, I mean, I feel like, yeah, that especially the Doctor's interaction and his kind of like, you know, you are a good Dalek at the end, that's probably going to be the thing that will come back the most. I mean, if Clara does have... they're pretty heavy-handed with kind of foreshadowing and things that will affect people, and they didn't really seem to have any concerns about Clara doing that. So maybe they'll be like, surprise, you did this, and then some stuff happened afterwards. And they'll be like, hey, remember when you touched that Dalek memory core? Now you've got this problem. But usually they, in this kind of show, because it is like a family show and it's quite, like, you know, it's quite simple sometimes, they do generally kind of give you a little tap on the shoulder about things like that, and I didn't feel that with the Clara situation, so I don't know if that's going to be too present. I'm pretty sure the Doctor and all his inner hatred and how, you know, he can relate to Daleks or whatever, that's probably going to be more of an issue. Right. But I don't know. Like,
yeah, and it's funny because I think it's a good point you bring up, Natalie, about it being a family show, because I think one thing that's really important for people to remember is Doctor Who has always been produced solely by BBC, meaning the UK. It has always been sort of the family
government
tea time,
budget.
Government license fee, government budget show. It's not a co-production with BBC America, BBC Canada, BBC Australia, where the stuff does tend to get a little more mature. It goes on at a later time. Although I know this year I think Doctor Who is airing a little later than it traditionally has on Saturdays in the UK. But in the UK, it is still very much at its heart that sort of like family hour show, whereas I can't speak for Australia, but I think for this country, it's airing at 9 o'clock at night. It's on a premium cable channel. A lot of the audience that's watching it is people who are their 20s or older. It's not seen as a family show, so I think that's something that is hard sometimes for people in this country to grasp, that it's meant younger, so sometimes it is going to be simpler, and I don't think that's bad.
Harry might have frozen.
Oh, you with us still, Harry? No. Yep, there he is.
Oh, no, that's no, I was just being really still.
Okay, that's fine.
We might have to jump start Harry. I think it's going on at 4 a.m. there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that a lot of people that follow it, I mean, we do have a lot of, like, we have the ABC here, which is not the same as your ABC. It's our version of the BBC. So it's like your PBS. Anyway, it's the public broadcasting, you know, et cetera. And so it is on the ABC here, so it is kind of known, and they have, like, you know, the merchandise and stuff like that. But, yeah, in America, it feels like the fans are mainly people who are, like, following it in a kind of fanish, you know, fandom way online, and it's like people who are properly invested in that kind of geek culture way, as opposed to it being more of an accessible thing in the UK for, you know, that everyone, you know, just tunes into.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is very much designed for, you know, for that situation, which is why sometimes either things are quite low budget or quite, you know, simplistic. It is, you know, they're right. Not. If they wanted to, you know, having it become like, you know, a co-production or something like that, or a bigger budget thing, would probably take away from the general audience. And the general audience is not the internet and the fandom. The general audience is like the, you know, 17 generations of BBC watching families.
Good point. Good point. Why don't we circle back again? We were just talking a second ago about the Dalek and the ramifications of everybody being in the Dalek, but there's also the ramifications of, so now we have this Dalek, which, I mean, talk about a big old fade to black. One minute we're in the Dalek, and the next minute we're out of the Dalek. I would have loved to know how they got extracted when they blew away half the people on that spaceship. But
yeah, there was no one there.
It was like, surprise, we're here! I mean, you know, so
yeah. Those wristbands that they
Yeah, I guess they did, briefly. But like, does it now pop them out? Is it like a transmat? It pops them out somewhere else? I mean, it just...
Yeah, because they had to get put into the Dalek. So
right,
do they
come out in the big old little glass tube? Do they enter back to the glass tube? I don't know. So anyway, so they all end up in a corridor with the Dalek, and now they're all good chums somehow. And so this Dalek has now been turned good, and he's going to go back to his fleet, and what is he going to do exactly?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of was like, oh, you've got a job to do. Of course you do. Like, what? Like, what? Like, what was that?
I mean, is he going to slay them one Dalek at a time? Or, like, what is he going to do?
Maybe he's going to be like Jesus. He's going to convert them.
Convert
like,
the Daleks.
Yeah.
He's going to go evangelize the Daleks. I don't know. Harry, you got a theory? What is this, like, lone... rogue Dalek gonna do?
Well, I would have thought that he would have gone back to the ship and self-destructed to just sort of try and blow them all up and get them out. But I think the fact that we didn't see that is probably significant. If they were going
maybe
to kill him,
maybe he's
going to
be their one Dalek pal that they like bump into every now and then.
It's the warm and fuzzy Dalek. I mean, it's just so hilarious. I mean, are they going to take the little probes off him? I don't know. Is he going to go back to the ship with his little probes still stuck to him? I don't know.
Do you think this little guy is like a possibility, like that he's one of the Daleks that we've seen before? Like it may, like that he was the one that Rose ends up touching in the far future or something like that? Like, you know, if they like cycled back on a story like that?
They could. I mean, wibbly wobbly and all that. Why not? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It could be. Why don't we, we'll talk about Clara a little bit, and then we'll definitely get to Danny, because I think Danny is going to be fascinating in all this. So, I really liked Clara this time out. I think we're continuing to see more character development of Clara being Clara. So I enjoyed that. I also liked, seeing more of her standing on her own two feet and her interactions also with Journey and the other people there. I felt like, you know, we didn't get that a lot of the last season. It was more of her, like, standing around going, yes, doctor, let me go over here and do this. Like, I felt she was a very active part in, you know, attempting to do things and working as equals. How about you guys? How did you feel about Clara this episode?
I really liked her, personally. I thought it was sort of, we're finally getting the companion we were probably all hoping for when, you know, we found out Clara was going to be coming in. Last year, she was too much of a plot device, and beyond that, she was just your stereotypical faceless companion, as you said, yes, doctor, of course, doctor, three bags full, doctor, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But this series, it looks like, it's still early days, but it looks like she's going to be having a personality and an arc of her own. And, you know, she'll actually be an interesting character to watch.
Yeah, I'm glad everything isn't hinging on her being, like, the saviour of the universe, number one, because that, like, I don't know, it was too much. Number one, I didn't really like the plot. Number two, it kind of took away from her having any autonomy. And, I don't know, I really like what I've seen of Clara this season. And if we were going from scratch with that, I'd be really happy with her. But it feels like they've totally just rewritten the character, basically.
Here's the thing. When she was Oswin Clara, do you think that whole experience is just erased from her memory core? Because I felt like she didn't use any of her knowledge of Oswin Clara for anything that took place this episode. It was almost as if that experience hadn't happened. Like, so did she basically get a reset on that?
I don't think she necessarily remembers all of those lives. She got split up into all of those things and, like...
So it's like a distant memory.
So
it's basically like a distant memory at best. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I think it's more like clones or something where it's her, but it takes off from a different point. And in the same way that 10 doesn't necessarily have all the same memories as 10 too, if you know what I mean. Like, they started in the same place, but they don't share a brain or anything.
Okay.
But I don't know. I really hated that Clara plot. Like, I think it's just a disservice to so many things in the show, so I don't really understand what happened there. But
yeah.
I really like who she is right now, and, like, yep. I like that she's not just this, you know, oh, I'm a strong character because I'm sassy. And, like, she does
right.
seem to have a bit more than that. But
right.
as I said, and if we were starting from scratch, I'd really, really like that. I really like who she is now. But I'm a little bit like, you guys... You saw the bad response to this character, and you just went back and were like, we're just going to rewrite basically everything. This is fine.
Yeah.
And I mean, I suppose sometimes you've got to just take a plunge, but she feels very different, and it doesn't feel like character development. It just feels like they started again, which, I mean, and I'm happy with her now, but I think they did just start again with her, basically.
Yeah.
It's nice, especially because in Deep Breath last week, you know, when her and the doctor were having that conversation in the restaurant, he was talking about, you know, control freak and all the rest of it. And time again recently, we've had Clara and the doctor tell us what Clara's like as a person, but it seems like finally we're actually getting to see what she's like as a person, which,
yeah.
you know, like you said, it's like she's finally got the character now. We don't just have to be told she's a control freak. We can see, I imagine... with Dani coming into it, we can see that she's a control freak, you know, and that's nicer, actually seeing the character.
Right. You know what, since you mentioned Dani, why don't we get on to Dani? So we had a debut this time of Samuel Anderson playing Dani Pink, and from what we can tell from the episode, he has some sort of military background. We don't know specifically if he was Army or what particular conflict he was in, although I guess we are meant to assume that he is a human being and likely saw a military action given his age. I'm going to say the Middle East or Asia somewhere is my guess. The other side of it is, too, just to grab a quick comment from Twitter on Ember Scorpio. He's asking if there could be some kind of connection between Dani Pink and Journey Blue. We have blue and pink. Does that have any kind of connection? Also, in particular, Clara even brings it up. You know, oh, I met a soldier named Pink. Your name is Blue. So you feel like, you know, our notice is being drawn to it. Natalie, I know you quite like Samuel Anderson because you know him from History Boys, so what do you think of him?
I mean, yeah, Harry and I are both pretty big fans of that. I remember it was one of the first things we ever talked about, but I stalk the History Boys cast. Not stalk them, but like, not in real life, but I stalk their careers. I saw the original History Boys on stage.
Send the hate tweets to Natalie Fisher. Natalie would be the stalker. That's okay, go ahead.
I'm not! No, please don't do that. I mean, their careers. I mean, I watch everything they're in. I saw the original History Boys on stage when it first was touring. I just, from a theatre subscription, I didn't really know anything about it. I got taken along, and it changed my life. It totally changed my life. And it's like, I love the film adaptation. I have the radio play adaptation. Just so I love it. He is one of the original eight boys from the first cast. The National Theatre toured, etc. And a couple of other History Boys have been on Doctor Who before. Russell Tovey and James Corden were both in the original cast as well. But Samuel Anderson has had a relatively small career. Like he hasn't had other members like Dominic Cooper. He's in movies and stuff. Sam Barnett, very active in theatre, just got nominated for a Tony and stuff like that. But Samuel Anderson has not had a massive career. He's done BBC covered stuff, you know.
He's done the equivalent of Law and Order in the United States.
He's been an under the radar working actor, and this is quite a prominent role, and it's cool. Basically I'm just excited by anyone, you know, from that cast doing something, and this is going to be quite a, you know, like, not a companion role, but apparently quite a significant, you know, team TARDIS role. So that's exciting for me, I guess.
Yeah. Harry, what about you? What do you make of Dani Pink?
I think he's so good really good from what we've seen of him so far. I mean, I'm not too sure. We didn't really get to glimpse much of him this episode. And like you were talking about with the question with the blue and the pink, I think the fact that we've had two soldiers introduced in one episode and both of their surnames are colours, you know, is obviously significant. It's too blatant for it not to be something. I don't know if that was maybe they were using the colours as a way to sort of draw our attention of the parallels between the Doctor's reaction with Journey Blue and Clara's reaction with Dani Pink, and maybe what will eventually be the Doctor's reaction to Dani Pink. But I'd like to think there was something more to it. As a character, I think he's good. I can't wait to see more of him, really.
I'm curious. Yeah. So we see him, you know, the kids are asking him questions, and obviously he's started this sort of military cadet corps at the school, at Coal Hill School, sort of like an ROTC unit in the U.S., although not, I mean, despite Britain's opinion that every American is walking around with a loaded machine gun all the time, I will assure you that not every single one of our high schools has some sort of military unit attached to it. In fact, most of them do not. You know, so he's got this sort of cadet core and training thing going on at the school, and the kids are obviously asking him questions about his military background, which he's not entirely comfortable discussing. It's obvious. And then I thought the phraseology was interesting, because the kid said, you know, sir, have you ever you know, shot anyone, and he says, you know, in a war, not everyone is on your side. So I thought that was a very diplomatic way.
I kind of liked the way he was like, we were soldiers, there were more soldiers, not all of us were on the same
side. I mean, I thought that was right. But then I thought the interesting flip on it, one of the kids asked, was, have you ever killed anyone who wasn't a soldier?
Why would you even ask that? What a
well. So now here's the thing, but think about how. But here's where I think Doctor Who gets fun with this. Maybe is I think we're meant to assume that he has taken place in some war in this in our universe in our present. Mm. And like I said, I think we're probably meant to think it's in the Middle East. Mm. But what if he was taking place in a war in a future place? What if he was taking place in a Dalek war or another war, and when he's asked, did you ever kill anybody who's not a soldier, could you have killed Daleks? Could you have killed Cybermen? Could you have killed, I don't know. So what do you think? Do you think he's, I'm just wondering if that was just some deliberate getting around the question, because the question wasn't if you killed anybody human.
Well, what it made me... He did have his, like, sad single tear, which was, like, made me think it was, like, a horrible memory of, like, you know, some trauma, like he accidentally killed a child or something, I don't
know. Your friendly fire or something, yeah.
Yeah, like he accidentally killed his BFF or something. But, like, I was... The pink and blue, and it made me wonder... And the fact that they're soldiers made me wonder if he's, like... if there is some, like, special, if they were out of some, I don't know, some special battalion or something, and that he's, like, displaced in time, if you know what I mean, like, and that they've all been, like, there was a unit, and they all had code names, and maybe they all don't know about it or something like that, if you know what I mean, like, this special unit that did some really, like, secret job, and then they all got a brain wipe, and they just got assigned a random color code name or something, and they're all being placed all throughout history so that you can't track them down, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so Natalie, I feel like you and I have the same crack theory that Danny Pink is not per se from this time, that we're being led differently.
I don't know, I'm curious. The only thing about the connection made me think that, group of soldiers, and I'm just sort of feeling this out, group of soldiers did a super secret, maybe they assassinated the president, I don't know, maybe they destroyed a whole planet, maybe, I don't know. They had they were like Navy SEALs, if you know what I mean. They did a dirty work. They did job that was a dirty work. And because of that, they got, like, either their memory changed or maybe not their memory changed. Maybe they remember it because they got witness protection or something like that.
And they've got emotional baggage from it.
Got a code name, which is, you know, a random color assigned to them. And then they were placed at different parts throughout history so no one would suspect them. Made this up.
That's good. It's a good crack theory. Harry, how about you? Any kind of crack theories in regards to Danny Pink, where he's going, who he is, anything like that?
I don't know if there's anything I'd say. I'm not too sure about if he's, you know, from space or a different time, but I'm not saying I don't think he's involved with anything alien. I just think, personally, he is a human in his correct time. He's obviously got secrets and something more to him that we're not finding out. And I think that could probably be linked to future episodes or whatever the arc is going to be. But I'm not really sure. I wouldn't like to say, because obviously pretty much every theory we have ever come up with on here is completely, completely untrue. But
it's true.
I don't have any idea. I think he's hiding something. He's haunted by his past. I'd like to think with it being Doctor Who, it's not just going to be a soldier, you know, a bog-standard soldier. There'll be something more to it. But who knows? We'll have to watch and see if we get any more clues.
Yeah, I have to laugh. I know, it's just like, you're so right. Like, we just guess and we're always dead wrong. The only person I know who's ever really gotten something dead right, and she was totally joking at the time, one of my friends was, frankly, a little tipsy when she made the prediction. She said, and what's going to happen is the face of Beau is going to actually turn out to be Jack Harkness. And she was totally kidding. She did not mean it. And when that happened, she was like, oh my God. So, you know, who knows? It's all, you know, it's all a guessing game. It's all a total game. So why don't we start to wrap up a little bit, but before we do, we did talk about her before, Missy. What a name that is. Missy, who I keep calling Mary Poppins on crack, because she is just they're in paradise serving people who drop in, apparently, tea. And they do just, like, they wake up and poof, they're there. Like, how do they get there? Like, how do
it's
they
heaven.
Get selected to be there? It's not technically heaven, it's paradise. I think
no,
that's...
No, right. She said heaven this week.
Oh, did she say heaven this week? Okay. So
she's weird.
Yeah, so is it intergalactic purgatory? What is she monitoring? I don't get it.
First, I was like, is this like River Song's universe? You know, the place that, you know, you have River God. And then I started thinking with this week, maybe it's like people that like, maybe she hates the Doctor, or like it's a refuge from people, like for people that like the Doctor has caused to die, if you know what I mean? Like, even though, you know, like the Doctor didn't kill that woman, like, but people, it's like, you know, you're responsible for all of these. Do you remember how a few seasons
yeah.
ago there was that one montage of like the Doctor seeing everyone who's like one of his adventures got this person killed, if you know what I mean, and
right.
like he had all this sadness. Maybe it's like another version of that, like where this woman is like building up this like collection of people like she feels sorry for because the Doctor causes them to be dead, and she takes care of them there, and then she's going to come after him and be like, you caused all these people to be dead.
Yeah. How about you, Harry? What do you think of Missy?
I've got, well, Missy herself, no idea who she is or what she wants, but I agree with Natalie in terms of what she was saying, that this seems to be linked to the Doctor, and I think this week especially, we've got more evidence towards that, because crucially, we don't see Ross, the first soldier to die. I mean, obviously, you understand we don't get cutaways both times that they die, because that would probably take away from the plot. But I think it's significant that we don't see him there at all. The only two people we've seen there are people who have either died because of the Doctor, whether the Doctor killed or convinced the half-faced man
they're
to commit suicide.
They're kind of suicides. Yeah, like the first
or
guy...
sacrifices.
Sacrifice, yeah.
If the alien man, like robot Tiki... mutant man, if he, because there was that big question obviously, like, did, you know, who was, you know, wrong, like, you know, is it that the Doctor could kill him, or is it that he wanted to live forever, you know, one of them was lying.
Like, I think
we
the
don't
guy
know which
jumped.
One
I mean,
it was.
I mean, I know
you think he
last,
jumped?
Yeah, I know in last week's episode I was in the minority. I said I think he jumped, and everybody else on the cast last week said that no, they thought the Doctor pushed him. I said no, I think he jumped, you know, and of course we don't know unless they reveal it later. Right, so
if
he's
he
sort
did,
of
it could be like
himself.
Sacrificial,
right.
suicide-y thing.
And she clearly was sacrificing herself for the greater good here to save everybody else. And I suppose the clockwork man last week was in theory
was
doing
die.
That too.
Yeah.
So, I don't really know.
I mean, maybe there is really a heaven for. Maybe there is really a beautiful garden heaven with cakes for people that
yes.
sacrifice.
And any second, Gwen Cooper in her wedding dress is going to poke her head around the hedge. Or Amy Pond
God.
As the girl who waited is going to poke around a hedge because it's the same garden. And even John and John Watson will come walking through because it's his wedding garden too. I swear, it's like use a new garden. It's Wales, it's wet, it's moist, there are more gardens, go get a new garden. I think we're, obviously, I feel like she is the cookie we're going to get all the way through up until the last episode. Like, it's got to be, you know, as we were getting, you know what it reminds me of a little bit, it was a couple seasons ago where, like, Rose Tyler's face used to just sort of randomly pop up. In places, and she's there going like, Doctor, and she's mouthing, and then she's off the screen. I feel like we're not going to get anything about Missy, I feel like, until, like, the last episode, and it's like, surprise, here I am. You know, I think that's...
Do you think she's evil, or, like, not if not evil, do you think she's, like, against the Doctor? Like, if she's anti-Doctor, or like, or what?
I definitely do. How about you, Harry? Do you think... I mean, I don't think she's a friend of the Doctor at all. I think she's definitely an enemy.
The way she's made, the way she's been made out to be, she's so psychotically sweet that, like, she can't be just, you know, a normal friend. There's got to be something to her. I don't think she's going to be, whether or not maybe she won't be totally against the Doctor, I don't think she's got his best interests at heart anyway.
No,
and then
I don't
is she meant to be the same person that's meant to have been drawing Clara and the Doctor together in terms of the newspaper ad?
See, no,
well,
I don't
that's
know.
What they're heavily implied, isn't it, in the last episode?
Yeah.
Of
right.
The woman
so
in the
she...
why would she care about the Doctor and Clara?
Right. Like... Yeah. So is she the woman in the shop? I mean, that's the question of the hour, and I think that's something that we were talking last week that, amazingly enough, the Doctor has never said the obvious, which is, describe for me this woman in the shop. At some point, I'd love to know what the woman, I mean, give me a hair color at least, you know?
Did we never saw that scene, did we? Like when
we never did. I mean, it could be anyone from Rose Tyler to Martha Jones to, I mean, I don't even know how, I mean, I would love it to be Donna Noble. I don't know how that would work, but I would love it. But, you know, we don't know who the woman in the shop is at all. We haven't got the first clue, so.
Well, especially after the newspaper advert in last week's episode, and, you know, the Doctor sort of put them both together and suggested at least that it's the same person. That's when you think you turn around and go, okay, so tell me a bit about this woman. You know, it's clearly significant.
Right. But he apparently has no, I mean, you know, we don't know if this woman is, you know, a 95-year-old grandmother or, like, some, you know, 22-year-old hottie. We have absolutely no idea. She could be anyone. We just knock out in a description. So.
Or a 90-year-old hottie, for all we
yeah,
know.
Yeah, there we go. Let's bend that stereotype. There we go.
Yeah, let's have a 90-year-old hottie. Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
So interesting. So before we wrap it up, any last minute thoughts before we start to close out?
No, I'm kind of, yeah, basically still curious. I said a little bit, both the characterization of the Doctor and Clara are both, I'm enjoying it in a bubble, but the wider view of, like, Moffat as a writer and what the past was like and stuff like that, I'm a bit like, what are you doing with these people now? Right. Kind of. But if I watch it in a bubble and not compare it, then I really like it. So hopefully that's good.
I know what I was wondering, and I just forgot to mention it. So Clara's at Coal Hill School, and obviously Danny Pink is a teacher there with her. Now, last year at, I guess it was the Christmas episode perhaps, we saw that the Coal Hill School, the current headmaster, is one Ian Chesterton, which is the name of the person who was Susan's teacher. So do we, I mean, it's
but,
not
yeah,
the same.
Yeah, about the Doctor.
Right. So my question is, the guy who introduced Clara to Danny, was that just another teacher, or was that the headmaster, was it?
He could have been the headmaster, because I'm pretty sure in the board that was outside in the 50th anniversary, doesn't it say one of the governors of the school, he's chairman of the board of governors or something.
Okay, so maybe that's...
Well, he might not be at the school.
So he's not per se the headmaster. He may not be there every day, but he's the chairman of the board of governors. Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if he pops back up, but no, he won't be there every week because he's not the
Okay, so then that was my question then. So then the man who is there is not perhaps supposed to be Ian, because he clearly is not. I mean, I don't think they're going to use the same actor.
Anyway.
But, okay, so that might be interesting. So I mean, that's a big part of the curiosity, too. I'm wondering is, you know, Coal Hill School, well, at some point, is the Doctor going to bring up the fact that, by the way, Clara, you're teaching at the school that my granddaughter used to go to. You think he might mention that in passing? I don't know. Anyway. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, my other little thing was, I don't know whether to read anything into the way Danny at the end asked her about whether, you know, she had a rule against soldiers. It was like he, you know, in the same, because you'd just seen the Doctor saying, oh, you know, if only you weren't a soldier in terms of taking Journey. But then, I don't know, was it just a little bit of a kind of a, you know, diptych in terms of, you know, having Clara get the same question, or like, is that a normal thing for people to ask? Like, or do you think he kind of has other worries or something like that?
I don't know. I thought the whole soldier thing was kind of interesting, because I feel like the Doctor has kind of a love hate with soldiering. I mean, he certainly seems to respect UNIT. He understands why they might be necessary, but at the same time, I don't think he's one who just wants wanton slaughter. Like, He wants things to stop, but there's like a line he doesn't want crossed. So I feel like he has sort of a real love-hate relationship with soldiers. I mean, certainly the Brig, he adored the Brig. I don't think he's against all soldiers. I don't think he's against
Martha for joining.
I don't think he's against a just war. But I feel like he thinks that for a lot of people, war is the first answer instead of the last answer, and I think that's what bothers him.
I think as well, particularly this incarnation, is probably going to be more anti-military because of In Time with the Doctor, the fact that he spent 300 years fighting a war. I think that's now in this new darker incarnation. He's going to be a bit more against violence, and definitely don't. After 300 years, you'd expect him to be done with it.
I think that's a good point to remember that coming off the Christmas episode, which was so long ago, that is what he dealt with. So I think that's a very, very solid point right there, Harry. Mm. So looking to wrap this one up then, next week we have the Doctor going back in time to meet Robin Hood, and I said this last week, I'm just going to be an insufferable fangirl, and people are going to want to slap me, but like, I'm so excited. I am like Clara. I am like, I want to meet Robin Hood. I am so excited that this is going to happen. I just loved it already, just in the preview alone, the shooting of the arrows at the TARDIS. I love there were arrows sticking out of the TARDIS. I thought that was fantastic. We've shot the TARDIS. So I don't know, are you guys excited for the Robin Hood storyline?
I am. Yeah. I mean, I was kind of not expecting it. I knew the title, but like I didn't know what I was expecting. But yeah, the trailer looked suitably ridiculous. So yeah.
It looks good, and I think it's nice. It's going to be nice to have a change of tone, especially after this week, which was quite dark. It looks like it's going to be all, you know, comedy and whimsical adventures, which I think will be quite fun to see.
Costumes,
situations, and how he reacts to all of that.
Yeah, and it's like a non-historical, you know, like it's not like, I mean, it's a legendary figure, so I feel like they have a lot of license to do whatever they want with it. You know, it's not like, you know, one of these, like, we're meeting Winston Churchill again, and you're kind of stuck with, you know, who Winston Churchill is, or Agatha Christie, or whoever, so I like that it's long ago and legendary, so they can have a lot of fun. So.
Speaking of Agatha Christie, Laura, you might know, either of you might know, given the episode title for the rest of the season, this one, the Orient Express one, are they actually bringing that actress back? Is it an Agatha Christie story? Do you guys happen to know?
I don't think the BBC has not officially revealed the synopsis on that, so I can't say yes or no. I would be suspicious if it were not a Christie reference. I would think it would be. I mean,
I always got from it with the title that, you know, at the end of The Big Bang, the Series 5 finale, right at the end where Rory and Amy have had their wedding, the Doctor gets a call on his phone, and I think, to be honest, it was sort of, you know, taking the piss really out of a lot of the Russell T Davies series cliffhangers. He gets the phone call, and I think he talks about there being a mummy on the Orient Express in space or something, and, you know, he smiles and then glides off. I wonder if maybe, you know, it'll just be, we'll go there, and he just remembers, oh yeah, I had a call about this 500 years ago.
It's great. And it could not be the literal Orient Express too. If you think about it, there was like the space Titanic, you know. So
I think it will be. I think it will be a space Orient Express train thing. So yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fun though. I'm looking forward to it. Like I have to say, I feel like I've warmed up to this Peter Capaldi a lot faster than I did David Tennant for sure. And I think I'm warmer to him now than I ever was to Matt Smith. I know there's probably a whole slew of people who are now going to send me hate tweets, unpopular Doctor Who opinion. Yeah, I know, right? An unpopular Doctor Who opinion. I was okay with Matt Smith, but I wasn't overly in love with Matt Smith. So my favorite of the Matt Smith years was actually Rory. So, yeah, I know. Those hate tweets are just coming to me right now. My inbox is just going to be, I mean, geez, it's hard enough for me just to live down the super hoolock people. So, you know, yeah. Since I actually said it, guys, I'll just issue my public apology now, okay? The Super Hoolock article was April Fool's. It was a joke.
The people still not, like, really? Like, really?
Hate mail on a regular basis 8 months after the dang article. I serious? Swear to you, I get, on average, 2 hate emails a week and a couple of tweets calling me. I mean, I've gotten death threats, baby. I've made it. I've gotten death threats on the internet over a fandom.
That's weird. Like,
well, I usually answer the email with, what was your first clue that it was an April Fool's article? The fact it was dated April 1st? Or the fact that they tracked down Benedict Cumberbatch's, like, manager at Heathrow Airport, and he was referring to Benedict Cumberbatch as the big BC and Benny. I mean, does that sound like anybody who's officially tied to Cumberbatch? He called him the big BC and Benny. I mean, what was your first clue? This was a not serious article. So, any case, so if you don't, so make my life interesting. Send me Matt Smith hate mail. It will break up the Super Who Lock
no!
hate mail that I'm getting.
Oh my god.
Oh, anyway.
Alright.
So, there we go. On that note, I guess it's time we sign off for this one. We'll catch you guys again next week. I'm not sure what time zone we'll be on. We're trying to jockey it up to catch different people, different time zones. So, anyway, until the next time, guys.